KQED.
Welcome to Forum. I'm Spencer Michaels, in for Michael Krasny. Coming up, a conversation with Alison Bechdel, who draws a comic strip and has a new book out that is getting excellent reviews. It's called Fun Home, a Family Tragicomic, and it's her own story in words but also in comic book-style pictures. The story, her life, her in-the-closet father, her family. A tale that is absorbing, somewhat difficult, and yet presented in an amusing, intellectual, and still personal way. We'll explain more, and you can join us with Alison Bechdel right after this. Welcome to Forum. I'm Spencer Michaels. Michael Krasny is away. My guest this hour is Alison Bechdel, whose comic strip, Dykes to Watch Out For, appears in 50 alternative newspapers. Now she's come out with her fourth book, Fun Home, a Family Tragicomic, her personal story of life at home in upstate New York with a father who mostly hid his homosexuality and a mother who went along until she didn't anymore. Alison herself discovered in her teen years she was a lesbian and came out, which was an interesting counterpoint to her father's mostly secretive gay life. Sounds very introspective and serious, which of course it is. I was a bit skeptical, especially when I learned the book is what's called a graphic novel done in comic book style. But within a few minutes of starting to read or look at it, I was absorbed and intrigued and amused. And rather than describe it any further, we'll let Alison Bechdel tell her own story. Unfortunately, this is radio and you can't see the pictures. Alison, welcome to Forum.
Thank you, Spencer.
It's an interesting book. What prompted you to, this is more than coming out, this is telling all the family secrets in an interesting way. What made you decide to do it at this point in your career?
Well, you know, I've wanted to tell this story since pretty much as soon as it happened. I would say like a year, I was 19 when my father died, and when I was 20, I knew I wanted to tell this story in some way.
Let me ask you, just parenthetically, how old are you now?
Oh, I'm 45 now.
I see.
And I'll also say that it took me 7 years to do this book. It was sort of
really?
A massive undertaking, yes. Well, that's sort of the nature of graphic novels, I think.
Really?
Well, yeah, it's like you have to write a book, and then you have to illustrate it and, you know, write it all out by hand like a monk.
Well, let's talk about the story
right.
Before we get into analyzing it. I mean, the story is you growing up with your father and mother in upstate New York.
It's actually central Pennsylvania.
Oh, central Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Oh. And what's going on that's worthy of the novel?
Well, when I had this very confusing time in my life. When I decided to come out to my family, I found out from my mother that my dad was gay. And a few months after that, he was dead. And I'm pretty sure it was probably suicide. So it was a very complex time. You know, it was very confusing. I had all this, you know, coming out sexuality stuff going on, and then this very tragic family situation. And I could just see that it was a good story somehow. I was raised, my family was very kind of detached in their way, which I think enabled me to be that, you know, to have that kind of perspective so early on. But it was a great story. You know, lesbian daughter comes out, outs her closeted gay father, and this terrible thing happens.
Well, did you out your closeted gay father? It didn't sound like it.
I did in a way. I mean, I feel like if I hadn't come along in my blithe, youthful way, you know, telling the truth, maybe my father would still be alive. Maybe I wouldn't have pushed them to deal with anything, and he'd still be around, you know.
So the obvious pop psychology kind of implication here is maybe you feel a little guilt over your father's death?
Yes. Yes, I do. I've felt responsible for it for a long time. I don't believe that I'm responsible, but I do feel that on an emotional level.
And one of the things that was interesting in the book, and I think that keeps the book going, is your own skepticism about your own story. I'm not sure that my father committed suicide. I'm not sure that I contributed toward it. I mean, you're not even positive of all these things happened.
Yeah. Well, I think that's important in a memoir to, you know, assess your own methodology. How do we really know things are true? I wanted to be very as accurate as I could be, and I just don't really know. It's not like he left a note, you know? I think that's part of the story, the uncertainty.
And what about the implications for your own memory?
Oh, and that too. I'm kind of a compulsive archivist. I've kept a diary since I was 10, which I drew on a lot for the material in the book. Even though when I was very young, there's not really a lot of hard information there. It's just like I read a Hardy Boys book today, or I watched the Brady Bunch. But somehow, it was having that just documentary evidence of what was going on in my life was very helpful, reconstructing the story. And it got more, you know, there was more information as I got older. But my memories are faulty. And I'm glad I had the diaries because, like, one whole chapter of the book is based on this strange summer, the summer I was 13. And I had memories of all these discrete, different things happening, like my mother performing and the importance of being earnest at the local summer stock playhouse. And I had a memory of my dad almost being arrested for buying an underage boy a drink. And I had memories of Watergate and all these other things. I got my first period and we had this terrible storm that blew all these trees down on our property. But they all happened, as I learned in my diary, like within a 2-month period. I wouldn't have known that if I didn't have this record. And that is interesting to me in itself, that kind of synchronicity, like what was going on, that all these bizarre, similar sorts of events were manifesting.
Now, your diary, the way you refer to it in your book, seems to be a written diary. You didn't do a comic book version of your diary.
No, I drew a lot separately, and I kept a text diary. I didn't start really combining words and pictures till after I got out of college.
It's an interesting format, and one that many of us are not used to, I think. I read the comics. I love the comics, but I don't usually think of them as literary, except maybe Doonesbury.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this is a whole, a long battle going on for graphic narrative to gain legitimacy. And I think, when I was 20 and when I first wanted to tell this story, I had no conception of it as a graphic story at all. I mean, that didn't exist. It wasn't until the mid-80s that Art Spiegelman's Mouse was published, and that was really groundbreaking because it was a comic book about something very, very serious, about the Holocaust. And that just opened the way for people to do serious material in this format. And so eventually, as I became a cartoonist myself and did my comic strip, Dykes to Watch Out for all these years, it became clear that this was a way for me to tell my own story, too.
You're a good writer. Why do you use the comic book form? What does that add?
Spencer. Okay.
I could answer that too, but I want to hear your answer.
There's like a long history of people saying that people who do comic strip art, people who are cartoonists, they're mediocre writers and they're mediocre artists. And they've found this kind of compromise form where they can kind of do both in an okay fashion. But I really feel strongly that that's not true, that what's going on is that there's a whole third thing. There's the writing and the drawing, and then there's the fusion of the writing and the drawing. And for me, writing is a visual act. It's inextricably bound up for me with the sequencing of images. I don't think I could have told this story. I couldn't have told this story without having access to the images as well as the text.
When I look at the images, this is just my personal observation, and I look at the pictures you've drawn of your family, I don't get the feeling that any of them are having a very good time. They all look kind of miserable.
Yeah, there's a sort of grimness to it. We were sort of miserable.
You were and you weren't, though. I mean, there was a functioning family.
Yes. Yeah, we did have a lot of fun together that I didn't necessarily include in the book.
You talked about vacations that you went to, and you had like a little camping area near your house.
Right. Well, that was fun. I don't know. You mean the expressions on the characters' faces.
Especially your father, but your mother as well, and the pictures of you vary a little bit more. But there seems to be a underlying tension in the way you drew them.
Oh, well, yeah. That was the point, I think. I mean, it's just, to draw happy, smiling faces wouldn't be very evocative.
One of the things we haven't mentioned yet. The name of the book, incidentally, is Fun Home.
Oh, yes.
A family tragic comic, and we're talking to Alison Bechtel, who wrote and drew it. Fun Home, fun is the first three letters of funeral.
Yes.
Your house, where you lived was the local funeral home. Your dad was the mortician.
Yeah, we didn't actually live in the funeral home, but my grandmother did, and she was right up the street, and I spent a lot of time there, dusting off the caskets and vacuuming and stuff like that. A big part of the book is about death, obviously, but not just my father's death, but the weird, surreal quality of growing up surrounded by, the workaday mechanics of death all the time. Going to the cemetery and talking to the grave diggers with my dad. We'd go play in the cemetery while he did that. And we developed this very cavalier, silly attitude about death that you would think it would help you to deal with actual death, growing up exposed to it like that. But really, it made it, I think, more difficult for me to really experience my father's own death.
How?
Well, it just made it all so odd. Here was my dad laid out in the funeral home where I had just like arranged flowers like a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
It just made it seem less real.
Your father was hit by a truck,
yes,
crossing the road after he was doing some gardening.
Yes.
And what made you think that was a suicide?
Well, the truck driver, I don't know how I know this information. I guess someone just passed it along after he died. The truck driver described him as jumping backwards into the road, as if he'd seen a snake or something. So that was sort of suspicious. Like, you don't just jump in front of a truck, even if you see a snake, really. I mean, would you rather get bitten by a snake or hit by a truck? So that was suspicious. He was reading a book by Camus, A Happy Death, and leaving it lying around the house in sort of ostentatious manner for a few days, with some interesting bits underlined. That could be nothing. That could just be some crazy coincidence in my head, but it seems significant. My mother had just asked him for a divorce not so long before that. So it just seemed very suspect.
Your father was an interesting character. He was obviously pretty smart. He was well-read.
Mm-hmm.
He was always helping you, or I don't know, helping, but certainly encouraging you.
Browbeating.
Browbeating you. You didn't seem to resent it particularly. Maybe you just thought that's the way things are. Tell me about your father. I mean, what made him tick?
Well, that was part of what I wanted to try and figure out in this book. Why he was very smart and very talented. Why did he remain teaching high school English in this very small farm town?
And serving as the mortician.
And working as the mortician. And he did lots of things. He was like on the county historical society. He worked in a historical museum that that we had in the local, in the county seat. He was very busy. He did all kinds of stuff. And he sold antiques.
And loved them.
Yes.
Filled your house up with them.
Yes, he was obsessed with them. We lived in a museum, practically. So what made him tick? It was like he just made himself this safe, sort of fictionalized world, in a way, where I think he had this secret, but he was still very much a part of this small town life. All his family is there. He was very close with them. We all were very close. And he couldn't reconcile the secret with his family. So he kept the secret and stayed with his family.
The secret being that he was gay.
Yes.
Did he act on it? He said he was once arrested for giving a beer to an underage kid.
Yes, I'm pretty sure he acted on it. I don't have the details, but, we would always have these handsome young men hanging out around our house helping him with yard work. Guys from the high school, his students. I'm not naive. I'm sure there was something going on.
Did your mother know about it? Was she aware of it?
Yes. I don't know exactly how much. I mean, all I know, I found out through my mother. But I don't know when she found things out or how. She doesn't like to talk about it very much.
At one point, she actually said to you, though, your father's gay.
Yes, she did. And that he had had affairs with other men and boys.
So this is a tough thing to come to grips with, obviously.
It was pretty shocking at the time. I had no idea.
You had no idea?
No. No. In fact, when she said your father has had affairs, I assumed she meant women.
Huh.
So, yeah, it was really a blow, especially, wrapped all up as it was with my own coming out.
Did you like your father? Did you get along with him?
I loved my father. He was a wonderful person. We were very close, extraordinarily close, I think, for a father and daughter. Maybe inappropriately so, in a way. I think I was kind of like his emotional support in a way that I shouldn't have been. But it was mostly after I left home and moved and went to college that we got very close. We'd talk on the phone all the time, and he wrote me letters. I have this whole sheaf of wonderful letters that he sent me during those years, although they dropped off toward the end of the time as he was like getting more freaked out, I think. I don't have a lot toward the end.
Did he ever discuss any of this with you?
Well, that's another thing I do in the book, is I show this one brief moment. We had one conversation about it, one very kind of veiled conversation where we both, confessed to one another. But he never actually said the words, "I'm gay."
What did he say?
He said he told me about men he'd been involved with, that there was this guy when he was 14 at the farm. He grew up on a farm who he had this pleasant relationship with. That's how he described it. It's funny because at another point my mother tells me that my dad had been molested by a farmhand. So I got these two very different versions, and it's curious. I'm sure perhaps my father presented it to my mother initially as like, this terrible thing happened to me, that's why I'm the way I am. But when he told me, it was like a nice thing that had happened to him.
Did your father, the pictures in the book of your father and what you just said about him, that you loved him, that you got along with him, that you liked talking to him, don't quite match the tension that appears in his face in your pictures of him. He looks like he's always on the edge, ready to go off, ready to explode.
Oh, well, he was. He had a terrible temper. I mean, that's another. He was a very complicated person. Yes, I loved him and he was great, but he was also kind of a bastard, frankly. He could be really abusive. He was very mean to all of us. He'd explode and have terrible temper tantrums. You never knew when it was going to happen. But then he'd have this wonderful side, too. And I tried to capture all of that. It's not any simple thing.
Did you grew up, at a time during the Vietnam War, I guess?
Yeah.
Did that have any influence on all of this?
I was pretty unaware of current events growing up. I really didn't pay much attention. My parents weren't at all overtly political or didn't discuss stuff. Really, Watergate, I think, was the beginning of my political consciousness, and only barely then. I was more concerned with the fact that it kept bumping all my favorite television shows off the air.
Which were?
The Brady Bunch, The Partridge Family, Nanny and the Professor.
Little Escapist.
Yeah. Oh, God, I love The Brady Bunch in that tidy ranch house. Man.
Did your father ever get any help? At one point, he got arrested for giving this young person beer.
Yes.
And wasn't one of the conditions for that that he get some help?
Yes, he did go to therapy for a while. And my mother actually suspects him of having an affair with the therapist, with the psychiatrist that he had to see, which I wouldn't be surprised by. It was just a six-month thing, you know, and that was, you know, in the 70s. I think people had very different ideas about what constituted therapy.
Well, but there was, you know, psychoanalysis, and there were therapists in the 70s. It wasn't like that long ago.
That's true.
But he didn't continue with it, and it wasn't a subject around the dinner table or anything at all?
No, he did once confess to me that he was doing this when I was 13, when he was actually doing it. It's probably one of the few...
Doing therapy.
Yes, he told me he was all dressed up one morning, which was strange, in the summer, because he was a school teacher and didn't work in the summer. I asked him where he was going, and he very shamefacedly told me he was going to Danville. And that's like, you know, where the state mental hospital is.
Oh, so I was, this is in Vermont. Oh, no,
in Pennsylvania. So yeah. I said, what, are you going to the mental hospital? You know, like teasing him. And he said, yes. And I couldn't believe it. He said he had to go see a psychiatrist. That was pretty shocking.
It sounds as though you had plenty of material to write a book about, and in fact you did. The book is called Fun Home, A Tragicomic. We're talking with Alison Bechdel, who wrote it and drew it. I just thought I'd mention you're going to be at a clean, well-lighted place for books on Venice Avenue in San Francisco, 7 o'clock tonight.
Yep.
That's your one public appearance in the Bay Area.
Actually, there's a couple more. I'm here all week. Well, I'm here tonight.
Tell me if you've got them.
Tomorrow I'm going to be reading at the LGBT Community Center. I think whatever it is, it's at 1800 Market Street tomorrow night at 8. And then I'm at Cody's in Berkeley on 4th Street on Wednesday evening.
Your comic that you draw, Dykes to Watch Out For, is, I assume, pretty much aimed at the gay and lesbian community because it's in alternative newspapers.
Right.
But the book, I don't think, is. And I'm wondering if you've got a readership for the book that's outside that community. I mean, we're doing it.
Yeah. Well, I hope so. I mean, I personally feel like my comic strip is for everybody, and I wish everybody would read it. But it is very specifically about a lesbian gang of friends. Although I think it's garnered a wider readership over the years. I've been doing it for almost 25 years.
Really?
Yeah, I've been around a long time.
You should try to get it in the Chronicle.
Oh, I would love it to be in the Chronicle.
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll take some of your phone calls. I hope you'll call us. We're talking with Alison Bechdel, author of Fun Home, A Family Tragicomic, and also Dykes to Watch Out For, a comic strip in 50 newspapers around the country. Been interesting talking to you, and we'll continue this in just a minute. You're listening to Forum on KQED FM. I'm Spencer Michaels. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Spencer Michaels on KQED FM, and we're talking with Alison Bechdel, whose new book is called Fun Home, A Family Tragicomic. And it's what they call a graphic novel written in comic book style. She's also the author of Dykes to Watch Out For, a comic strip in 50 alternative newspapers around the country. She's going to be various places around the Bay Area, reading, talking, next few days. Let's talk a little bit about the comic strip. What is it? And let me give out a phone number before I do that. If you want to call and talk with Alison or just give your own opinion, we're at 866-733-6786. That's toll-free, 866-733-6786. And you can email us at forum@kqed.org. Tell me a little bit, Alison, about the comic strip. What's it about?
Why are you doing it?
I started drawing this comic strip, Dykes to Watch Out For, soon after I got out of college. I think my first one was published in 1983. And it's a comic strip about a bunch of lesbians, as you might imagine. I think, you know, in a way, I look at my entire adult career doing this comic strip as a kind of backlash or reaction to my father's life, you know, that he led this very secret life. And I was determined to be very out and open about who I was, to the point of making it my profession, you know, that in some ways I was a professional lesbian. And it was a kind of shocking thing to do. My mother was a little flipped out that I was going to be actually publishing these cartoons with the word dyke in them under my own name. But I just felt like really clear that's what I wanted to do. And I, you know, I worked menial jobs for a while, and eventually I was able to actually quit working even part-time and just do the comic strip. And I feel like I've been very committed to documenting the gay and lesbian subculture in my comic strip. I think of it as sort of a chronicle or an archive. It's not just about, it's a soap opera strip in a way about these characters' lives and interpersonal dramas, but it's also a kind of an op-ed column where I drag a lot of current events into it and a lot of other issues. It's kind of a wordy comic strip, as comic strips go.
You live in rural Vermont.
Yes.
Somewhat isolated.
Yes.
It's a long way from San Francisco.
Yes, it is.
I mean, when you say even the word dykes in the comic strip kind of put your mother off and worried her a little bit, would that still be true in rural Vermont or Pennsylvania or whatever? I mean, San Francisco is different on that subject.
Yes, San Francisco is very, very different. But, you know, I think the rest of the country is rapidly catching up. I think the kind of changes that have gone on in the last 25 years are mind-boggling. I mean, for one thing, I couldn't have told this story about my family 25 years ago, I don't think. And I think that, in a way, I feel like my comic strip has made the memoir possible for me personally. You know, one thing the comic strip has been for me is a way to prove that lesbians are people too, you know, that we're humans, and these are human stories I'm telling. And I sort of needed to convince myself of that.
Are you perhaps preaching to the choir? Because the comic strip is essentially carried by alternative newspapers. I guess you mean mostly gay and lesbian newspapers.
Mostly, yes. Although I'm, you know, trying to break into the alternative weekly market. That's very difficult to do, though.
It is, because of the subject matter?
Well, you know, for a long time I thought it was the subject matter, and it might be, but it's also just a very tough market. You know, people have comic strips that they like in their papers, and you don't want to shake that up. I don't know. Maybe it will still happen. I hold out hopes that it will. I'm sorry, what did you ask?
Well, let's talk a little bit. I mean, you said you were a professional lesbian.
Yes.
Do you still kind of feel that way, or not?
I feel a little less evangelical than I used to. Like, it's okay now. I don't have to make it, the most important thing in my life.
You talk in the book about your first lesbian experience, and you spent a lot of time with your partner. Is that person still your partner, or is that changed?
No,
I mean, I figure I have license to ask you almost
sure.
anything personally, because the book is so open.
I know. It's sort of crazy. I don't know quite what possessed me to reveal all the stuff. I'm a pretty shy, introverted person. I hit on some kind of strange, buried streak of extroversion, I think.
Well, which sort of leads to the question, is the book a form of therapy? Is the book a way to try to make yourself a little more open and outgoing?
I really don't think of the book as therapy. I did plenty of therapy, and I didn't want to bring that into the book. You know, I feel like you got to sort that stuff out on your own and not force readers to go through it with you. The book was not therapy. I think of the book more as like, if anything, a proper funeral for my father, you know, a way to really memorialize him in an honest way. Unlike the, you know, bizarre fake ritual that we all went through at the funeral home and the cemetery that day.
That's interesting. I mean, when you read it, and as we've just talked about, your father, while he may have been an interesting guy and you may have loved him very much, he was a deceptive person, and he was a sort of a tyrant, and he went through temper tantrums. Interesting person to memorialize.
Well, you know, we love our parents almost no matter what. I mean, he was my father. He was responsible for my existence.
All right. Well, we've got some telephone calls, and we'll take one from Beth in San Francisco. Hello, Beth. You're on Forum.
Yes, hi. I wanted to ask Allison, I just finished reading the book, and frankly, I know your work for years. I've known your work. I didn't realize the book was by you when I picked it up to look through it at a bookstore and walked slowly, steadily toward the counter with it in hand, immediately engrossed, and then realized who the author was and was really happily surprised to see you doing some autobiography and memoir, and it was really, and especially because I'm a graphic novel fan, so it was really great to see that. So that said, then reading the book, I had some really kind of amazing deep insights to my own relationship with my father.
Huh.
And my curiosity is, I think we're probably about the same age, you and I, and from similar, not really similar background, sort of a similar background, but similar tomboyishness to, that we started with and probably still carry. And all the gender aspects, the gender questions that come up around roles and self-expression, what's allowed, what isn't allowed. I wish I could be a little more clear with this. I guess I'm asking, were you, in writing this novel and, thinking about it afterwards, at all involved or considering your own gender issues, gender thoughts, gender expressions, and how that relates to your relationship with your father?
Thank you, Beth.
Yeah, that was a very central issue for me, the whole gender thing, because I feel like somehow, I feel like my dad and I were sort of mirror images of one another in a way. Like, he was this man who really loved feminine things. He confessed to me that when he was young, he liked to dress up as a girl. I don't know where he got the girl's clothes, but he apparently did. And I was very tomboyish. I loved dressing up in boys' clothes. I still do. Yeah, I wanted to figure out, what's the connection? Like, I feel like in a way I was trying to compensate for my father, for him being so effeminate, that it made, in a way, part of my own tomboyishness was trying to, like, make up for that. And he was always trying to live vicariously through me, dressing me up in pretty dresses and stuff. He would, have to wrestle me into these things. My mother didn't care what I wore, but my father did. He was trying to enforce a kind of gender code on one level, making me look like a proper girl. But also, I think it was fun for him. I think he liked girls' clothes.
Your mother still alive?
Yes.
What does she think about all this?
Well, that's a very good question. My mother, this is very difficult for my mother.
She's, I bet.
Yeah, she's a very private person. She doesn't tell even her closest friends a lot of the stuff I've revealed in the book. And she comes from this generation where this is not what you do with your emotional pain or your family secrets. You don't drag them out into the light of day. You suck it up and you soldier on. And I think, my generation, that's what we do. We all go to therapy and we drag this stuff out. And I feel bad. I do honestly feel quite bad about the pain this is causing my mother.
I bet there's some pride, too. I mean, this is your fourth book. You run a comic strip. You're known around the country by a certain group of people. She must feel some pride.
Oh, she does, and she's actually told me that. My mom, she's remarkable because I think she's able to separate these things out, her personal feelings and the artistic accomplishment. And I'm endlessly grateful for that. I mean, she could have made it very difficult for me to do this book. She could have kicked up a big fuss, but she really didn't, even though I know it's painful for her.
How old is she at this point?
Oh, she would kill me if I told you.
Don't tell us. She's in her 70s, right?
I'm not going to even say.
Okay. All right. Let's take a call from Joe. Joe, you're on Forum. Hello.
Hi, Spencer.
Hi.
Hi, Allison. I'm a straight male cartoonist who's been reading your strip for 25 years. I think it just deserves the biggest audience it could get.
Thank you.
I am, aside from the fact that people don't get comics, and they don't know if they're supposed to look at them or supposed to read them, I think that you've created a cast of characters that is just terrific. I am, you know, can't wait to find out who's going to be hooking up with who, and sometimes horrified by the choices that people make, and I want to find out what happens every week. And I've been picking up the, you know, the Bay Times just to read your strip for years.
Thank you.
Where do you see the comic strip in the Bay Area?
Yeah, the Bay Times has carried it for like 20 years, I think.
The Bay Times, that's the only one
yes.
in the Bay Area.
Yes.
Okay, so Joe, and anything else? Nope, Joe's gone. All right, let's take a call from Jamie in doesn't say where. Hello, Jamie, you're on forum.
Oh, hey there. Yeah, I just wanted to give a plug to the graphic novel as a format. It's one of these formats that seems to have just fallen between the cracks. People who would enjoy the graphic novel seem to think that comics are just Superman and Batman and superhero characters, and you know, it was a huge independent comic book wave that happened in the 1980s and early 1990s, and it was really kind of a shame that there was so much great art and great stories that came out in, you know, sort of miniseries that were published in graphic novels, and it missed the target audience of the people who read the Batman and Superman and think of comics as just being that sort of format. And I think that people really need to have a look-see at the graphic novels and just see what's out there, because it's pretty phenomenal. It's not, you know?
Yeah, I think it's really happening. You know, I think finally, after these 20 years or so, people are starting to, you know, stop with the, oh, look, you know, comics can be serious, and just move on to discussing the comics as serious literature. I think it's really starting to happen.
Did Cavalier and Clay have anything to do with any of this?
I wonder. I think very likely. That was, you know, the timing of it anyway.
Took comic books seriously in
yes.
a way.
Yes. The whole lowbrow thing made middlebrow, perhaps.
You know, part of what's interesting about this is that in your intellectual history, and with your father looking on very carefully, he wasn't encouraging you on comic books. He was encouraging you on Proust and on Hemingway and on Faulkner. I mean,
that's
panoply
true.
Of intellectuals.
Yes, and that's a whole strand of the book. Each chapter of the book focuses on a different of my father's favorite writers, because he was very passionate about literature. I grew up steeped in that stuff, and I feel, in a way I became a cartoonist to get away from it, to get away from my father's aesthetic standards about art and about literature, and here was this lowbrow form that I could sort of escape into and elude his aesthetic judgment.
But you weren't rejecting, I didn't think you were rejecting Proust and Faulkner and Hemingway.
I have a conflicted relationship. I mean, I didn't like being force-fed this stuff. I didn't like being browbeaten about it. But eventually, I could when I came to it on my own, I loved it. I think it shows in my work. I mean, the style of writing that I use in this memoir in Fun Home is. It's pretty dense. It's pretty stylized for a graphic novel. I mean, and one of the things I really feel committed to doing is, you know, claiming some more turf for this format, that it can be very serious. It can be very literary.
Well, the whole concept of Marcel Proust and Times Past is embedded into the novel. I mean, this is almost Proustian, I guess.
That I love that. I hope so.
It's not the same format, obviously, but the quest is somewhat,
you know, somebody
similar.
Is coming out with a graphic novel version of Remembrance of Things Past, which seems sort of beside the point, if you ask me. That's a text work.
All right. Let me give out a phone number if you want to join our conversation with Alison Bechdel, author of Fun Home, a family tragicomic. We're at toll-free, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. And you can email us at forum@kqed.org. Actually, we've got an email here from Ellen, who says, one of the striking aspects of Bechdel's work is that she is not afraid to address almost every single issue all at once. Race, gender, war, labor, immigration, the environment, religion, media, globalization, you name it. I wonder where the energy for that kind of breadth comes from. Is it because it only has to be enacted on paper by a wide cast of characters rather than actually lived by a single person?
That's a very good question. I do feel in a way that I live vicariously through my comic strip. I don't have much of a life, frankly. I put a lot of effort into writing and drawing that thing and to doing and to researching current events. And I have a big, I have a broad mandate for the issues I want to cover in it. But I wouldn't say I'm an activist in any capacity.
But you did say you were a professional lesbian.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of implies a certain amount of activism.
I guess it does, in a way. I mean, it's like my life is my activism, but that seems sort of like you can't really claim that. It's sort of, I don't know, lazy or self-indulgent.
But all of these issues that Ellen writes about, race, gender, war, labor, immigration, environment, religion, media, blah, 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 those are issues that interest you.
Yes. But I think of myself, once I heard Billy Bragg talk about what he did with his music, and he said he didn't see it so much as activism as entertaining the troops, and I like that. I feel like what I provide is entertainment for the people who are out there working on those issues.
All right. Well, let's talk to Ken in San Rafael. Hi, Ken. You're on Forum.
Good. Hi, Allison.
Hi.
I just wanted to check in and tell you that you do have a lot of straight fans out there. I'm one of them.
Excellent.
And, you know, I think the reason why is because when I think of you and I think of your story, I think of you just telling your story. And there's a certain amount of power in just telling your story, which is what you do. And when you do that, what I see is that I realize how much of my father is in your father, and I realize how much of your family is in my family. And I think that's really how we bridge, you know, these gender gaps that are out there.
That makes me so happy to hear.
You know, it's just telling the story. And I think you're probably as rational and as elegant a spokesperson out there for doing that. So I just want you to know that I really appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
Why do you like the medium so much, Ken?
Ken?
Why is it that you like the graphic novel and the whole idea of illustrating what could have been written to some extent as a straight novel written in a, you know, just in words?
Well, I just think that, you know, we grew up with comic strips and you wonder where, you know, the next generation of Charles Schultz is coming from. And this might be it. But, you know, it accesses a different part of the brain, I think.
Yeah.
You know, when you're looking at things graphically instead of just reading them. And
yeah,
we're all pretty tuned into reading things. We're pretty tuned into being entertained by watching TV and everything else. But there's something that's always, you know, and the cartoonists know this. You know, there's something that is accessed in the brain when you're reading and looking, you know, at color and or cartoons or images at the same time. And I think that what it does is it gets the message across in just a different way that the brain can relate to.
Interesting.
That's very well put. I think it's a generational thing, too, Spencer. I think younger people just have a higher degree of visual literacy. I know I'm not even a particularly good visual storyteller. I see the work younger cartoonists are doing, and it's really astonishing.
A thought just occurred to me. You said when we started that it took you, what, 7 years to write this book?
Right.
And I read it, you know, in a weekend in my spare time.
I know. That's
and
the tragic
I feel
thing.
Sort of guilty. I mean,
but that's the beauty of it, too. It was very important to me to make something very concise, something very quickly that people could assimilate quickly. That, to me, is the essence of cartooning, too, that it goes right into your bloodstream.
All right. Let's talk to Marv in Fairfax. Hello, Marv. You're on Forum with Allison
Hello
Bechdel.
There.
Hello there.
Thank you. I just wanted to congratulate Allison for being part of what I feel was kind of a cultural re-education or a social awakening that I went through as a transplant from Ohio. And what's curious is I catch her strip on a regular basis via the Funny Times, which is published out of Cleveland. So I had to come to the West Coast to discover this. But it seems to me to be one of the best forms of kind of education when it's done in a serialized form like that, where you you see these characters who are just real people and dealing with all the same issues that all of us deal with parenting and making the right choices and constantly reevaluating life. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for your call. We're talking with Alison Bechdel. Fun Home is the name of the book and the comic strip that she writes, which is in the Bay Times, is Dykes to Watch Out For. Where else can one see the comic strip? Can you go online and
see
it?
Yeah, you can go online at my website, dykestowatchoutfor.com, and read
Dykes
it there.
Dykestowatchoutfor.com, all one word.
Yep.
And so you can see it online?
Yes.
Daily or back
issues? It's a bi-weekly strip, so every 2 weeks there's a new episode.
But can you see the back ones as well?
Yes.
I'm going to go do that.
Okay.
We have an email from Lisa in San Francisco. I want to thank Allison for writing this book. About 6 months after I came out to my family, when I was in college, my father was arrested for soliciting sex from men in a local park.
Oh, God.
He insisted that he is not gay, but that having sex with men is a recreational activity. Now, 15 years later, my parents are still married, and the subject is never discussed.
Wow.
However, he said to me privately once that when I came out, he was afraid that he had done this to me. I haven't read Allison's book yet, but I'm looking forward to reading her insights into the surreal world of being an out, proud lesbian with a closeted father.
That's pretty intense.
It is. And the concept of he had done this to me, mm-hmm. I mean, you allude to that as well.
You know, I don't think I actually ever thought of that. Maybe. I don't think my father felt that way. I'm not sure. Who knows?
But the fact that you were lesbian, you don't think had anything to do, or that thought never crossed your mind, put it that way.
Oh, well, who knows? I think homosexuality is partly genetic, perhaps, and partly not. And I suppose in that sense I might have gotten it from him, but I don't know.
Who knows?
Who knows?
All right, let's talk to Anne in San Jose. Anne, hello, you're on Forum.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm on the board of the Center of Literary Arts for San Jose State, and we brought it was proposed that we bring Neil Gaiman to San Jose State. And I
remind us who that is.
Oh, he's also a graphic novelist. But I must say, some of us stuffed shirts from the university did not know who he was at the time, and we found out and were just blown away by the wonderful literary value of the graphic novel. And so I am very eager to read Allison's novel now. But I just want to say that it awakened many of us, and it was one of the largest crowds we've ever had,
wow.
Including people coming for some really large, big names in the literary field. So it opened a whole new way of approaching literature that may be more accessible to many people who don't see literature at first as something that's accessible.
Can either of you remember the name of Neil Gaiman's book?
I know he did a series called The Sandman for a long time,
right.
Lots of other stuff.
Lots of things, but The Sandman is probably one of his most famous, well-known.
Yeah. That's very exciting.
So I just wanted to say that it certainly is an area that hasn't been maybe as well known as it should be, but I'm certainly a proponent of it.
Excellent.
All right. Well, we don't have a huge amount of time left, but let's take a call from Ben in Sacramento and see if we can condense this a little bit. Go ahead, Ben. You're on Forum.
Hi, I will be brief as I can. I am a transsexual male, meaning I was born female, body transition into being male, but grew up very much in the lesbian community and read your comics voraciously, pretty much right there in the Barnes & Noble without having to buy them, I'm sorry to say.
I love to hear that.
I just wanted to say that I grew up with a father as well who was a gay male and had a problem with young boys and whatnot, and I made it a big purpose in my life as I grew up as a lesbian to be out and proud about who I was. And strangely, as I discovered this about myself and transitioned, I started to deal with a lot of my own internalized homophobia that, you know, my dad obviously very much had, and the shame about who he was. And so I wondered if you could just comment sort of on your experience with that, and then also on the changing face of the lesbian community. I know I experience a great disconnect. I have to say that I haven't read one of your books in a long time, and that somewhat has to do with my own being shunned from the community and with lesbians in general.
Let's let Allison try to answer those because we don't have a lot of time left. Go ahead.
Boy, where do I even start? The internalized homophobia, yeah, I mean, I feel like that was so caught up, that was mixed up also with internalized misogyny for me, you know, growing up with my father. wait, now there's all this pressure. I get, it's a very complicated thought. I don't know if I can sort it out. I don't know. I've just, like, dedicated my life to, like, addressing my own internalized homophobia. Let's just leave it at that.
Okay. Well, let's tell people once again where you're going to be reading and talking. Clean, well-lighted place for books on Van Ness Avenue, 7 o'clock tonight in
yes.
San Francisco. Tomorrow on Market Street.
1800 Market Street,
1800
the LGBT Community Center at 8 p.m.
8 o'clock, and then over at Cody's Books.
On 4th Street in Berkeley on Wednesday evening.
On Wednesday evening. Okay, so, and the name of the book is Fun Home, a Family Tragicomic by Alison Bechdel. And how's it doing, by the way?
You know, it's doing, like, I'm astonished at how well it's doing. It's pretty remarkable. I mean, I'm used to publishing books with small presses in this subcultural community, and nothing like this has ever happened. It's getting, like, reviewed in the New York Times, and I was in People magazine the other week.
It's going to change you.
It just might.
You're not going to be an introvert anymore. All right, Alison, thank you very much for coming by.
Thank you,
Once
Spencer.
Again, the book is Fun Home, a Family Tragicomic by Alison Bechdel, and you can go listen to her at various places next day or two. Thanks for being here. I'm Spencer Michaels. This is Forum from KQED-FM, San Francisco.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.